Welcome to BICOM's Huddy Un Weekly Podcast. This is episode 17, and we are honoured to have with us as our special guest, Gershon Baskin, who is a longtime activist, former negotiator between Israel and Hamas, has many years' experience of the Israeli-Palestinian sort of negotiations. And we really want to talk to you today, Gershon, about Gaza discussions around a ceasefire or a longer-term deal. Thank you so much for joining us, Gershon.
My pleasure.
If we could start off by just really exploring sort of where we are now and what the likelihood is of more progress. I mean, the situation we seem to have, even as of this morning, is that Hamas is putting out messages that they're confident that a short-term ceasefire can be agreed. And then we're caught in between what happens next. And there seems to be a lot of messages saying that a longer-term actual agreement is perhaps not possible. How do you see the distance between those two places?
I think that we're in a really interesting moment of pragmatism being demonstrated by both Israel and by Hamas. It's really interesting because we've gone through 3 months of pretty intensive animosity and fighting, exchange of fire rockets, incendiary bombs from the Gaza, burning up all of the Western Negev, and Israeli retaliations in Gaza. And yet we see Gaza on the verge of economic and humanitarian collapse. And the Egyptians, who have played a very important role in putting pressure on Hamas to change its policies, to adopt to a more pragmatic line, also created over the last 3 months some kind of alienation between Egypt and Hamas, which limited the ability to move forward toward some kind of negotiation. But yet it seems right now that we're on the verge of a breakthrough. This is how it appears. Yesterday's shooting that came out of Gaza and an Israeli retaliation that killed two Hamas commandos, and then what seemed to be an Israeli apology for a miscalculation or a misunderstanding, seems to indicate that something serious is going on here with a chance of a short-term agreement. I think the most important thing now is to de-escalate the chances of us going to war, which seemed very, very close over the last weeks, and to allow both sides to take a deep breath while the Egyptians and the United Nations continuing their work to try and find the formula for a longer-term arrangement, which would involve the reconciliation between Fatah and Hamas, and hopefully also the prisoner exchange between Israel and Hamas that will bring home the bodies of the two Israeli soldiers and the two Israeli civilians that are in Gaza.
If I could just ask a question about the ceasefire that Hamas is saying we could have something by the end of the month. Explain to us what you think a ceasefire then looks like.
I think it's an understanding that Hamas ceases all rocket firing into Israel. They will put control of the border once again and prevent the kites and the balloons from crossing back into Israel. And Israel would normalize the crossings into Gaza in a more healthy way. One of the main problems that Gaza has faced is not just the entry of goods into Israel, but maybe even more importantly, the exit of goods out of Gaza. If Gaza can't produce anything that can be sold outside of Gaza, there's no money in Gaza to support the economy. They have to be relinked to the Israeli economy. They have to be relinked to the West Bank economy. And they have to be relinked to the world economy. They used to export fruits and vegetables to Europe and flowers to Europe and furniture to Israel and other places, and that needs to happen. Hamas wants a review of what's called the dual-use goods. There are a whole lot of goods that are used in the production of goods that can also be used in the production of weapons and bombs, which Israel doesn't allow into Gaza, and that seriously cripples the Palestinian economy in Gaza. So it's a combination of all these issues together. They talked in the past about reallowing workers from Gaza to come and work in Israel. I know that the kibbutzim and moshavim along the Gaza border would be very happy to have Palestinian workers back from Gaza. There's even been talk about reconstructing the Erez industrial zone that used to be at the northern part of the Gaza Strip along with Israel on the Israeli side of the border that employed more than 5,000 Palestinian workers directly and had an impact on probably 100,000 Palestinians in a broader sense, in terms of the industries and economy that it produced. So all these issues are coming back, and it's basically injecting new life into the chance of survival for the Gazan economy.
How you get to pass this first big hurdle, which seems to be the swap between Israeli bodies of Israeli soldiers being returned and the return of the two Israeli civilians, and what Hamas wants in return, which, as I understand it, will be a significant number of Hamas prisoners. Do you think that can be agreed? And what do you think Hamas's demands will be?
I think there are two elements that need to be resolved in a long-term ceasefire. The first one is the prisoners exchange, which I'll talk about in a moment. And the second part of it is the completion of the reconciliation between Fatah and Hamas that would enable the Palestinian Authority to retake control of the Gaza Strip and lead to new Palestinian elections. And that's equally as crucial to having any kind of long-term arrangement, because it seems very unlikely that Israel will agree to any kind of long-term formal arrangements that would essentially mean that we're recognizing Hamas and Gaza as a separate Palestinian state. I don't see that as being a likely scenario with the current Israeli government, or probably a future Israeli government as well. A long-term arrangement could be made with a Palestinian Authority that's retaking control of Gaza. With regard to the prisoner exchange, the gaps between the sides are quite deep. Hamas has refused to disclose what they're holding, claiming that they're holding a live soldier. Israel is 100% convinced that there is no soldier alive in Gaza, that they're holding two bodies. And Israel has indicated that it's willing to exchange bodies for bodies. A small humanitarian release of prisoners who did not kill Israelis with no blood on their hands. And then we're talking about minors, we're talking about women prisoners, perhaps some long-term sick prisoners. There are a number of Palestinian prisoners with cancer, a couple of prisoners who are blind, who are crippled, who wouldn't do any security risk to Israel. And then there's the question of the numbers. So Israel has indicated they're talking about tens and not hundreds or thousands. And Hamas has said that they are expecting thousands to be released, and they want the heavy long-term sentence prisoners, in other words, prisoners with blood on their hands, to be released. And these gaps are much too big, and Israel won't agree to it. I think that the Israeli offer will be bigger than it is today. It will also include the 40 to 45 ex-Shalit prisoners, those prisoners who were released in the Shalit deal, who were rearrested in June of 2014, who did not go back to terrorism. And out of the 45 that are still being held, probably that relates to about 40 of them. They will be included in the deal. I think a deal could be made if Hamas becomes more realistic about their expectations. They have to understand that Israel knows with 100% clarity that they are not holding a live soldier. And the holding of the two civilians who are mentally ill is not something that Israel is going to release prisoners who could be dangerous once they're released to Hamas.
And those, so you're looking at probably less than 100 Hamas prisoners, you think, that would be released?
First of all, I wouldn't call them Hamas prisoners. Hamas will likely demand that prisoners who are not only from Hamas be released, because Hamas sees itself as a national movement and they want to represent all Palestinians. So they will probably demand that prisoners who come from Fatah or from the Popular Front or other groups be released in the deal as well. Their main concern is Hamas, of course. But the number could be significantly increased if we're looking at people who have light offenses, of minors who threw stones, of women prisoners. It could go into the hundreds of people who are serving prison sentences of a year or under or slightly more than a year. There could be a kind of generosity of spirit of Israel to get this done in order to also link it with a longer-term ceasefire arrangement.
So I want to finish by asking two big questions. So one question would be, what is the motivation of Hamas? If Hamas wants to be the leader of the Palestinian people, but also needs to protect its sort of radical flank so that it's still a violent resistance movement against Israel, how does it sell a longer-term deal with Israel within the context of that mission?
I think it's really important to note that there are real changes happening within the Hamas movement, and they're not changes that I put on the axis of moderation or extremism, but rather on the axis of pragmatism versus not pragmatism. They are becoming increasingly pragmatic. Part of that is because of the difficulties that they have governing, the lack of money, the bankruptcy, the lack of support that they have in the Arab world that they had perhaps at their height when Mohamed Morsi was president of Egypt from the Muslim Brotherhood. They have officially detached themselves from the Muslim Brotherhood. They have turned over wanted people in the Gaza Strip to the Egyptian intelligence services. They're working hand in hand with the Egyptian intelligence services today. They have declared officially that they are willing to accept a Palestinian state in the territories that Israel occupied in 1967. They have not said they're willing to recognize Israel or make peace with Israel, but they have said that they would accept a Palestinian state. They still demand the right of return. They have said that they view all parts of the struggle as being legitimate, all forms of resistance are being limited, but they have also indicated that they are willing to restrain the use of the armed struggle in favor of what Abu Mazen keeps calling the non-violent popular resistance struggle. So Hamas has actually bought into the idea that the PLO has been advocating now as a way of resisting Israeli occupation, a non-violent popular struggle as well. And that could be brought more into the line of what most Palestinians see as the proper way of moving forward. Hamas also believes that if they are brought into the institutions of the PLO and there are free, fair, and open elections amongst the Palestinians for a new president and a new parliament, that they will do quite well, which they probably will. And it's not an indication of Palestinian political extremism or support of fundamental Islamic movements. Hamas is becoming much more of an expression of Palestinian nationalism in their demands. They have never really been about a pan-Islamic caliphate. They've always been about a Palestinian state from the river to the sea with an Islamic identity. And it's important to recognize these changes that are taking place within Hamas. There are the more radical extremes. I don't think that they are anywhere majority within the movement. I think the mainstream today represents a much more pragmatic attitude toward the future. And there's a lot of self-criticism, introspection, questioning the tactics and strategies that they've held over the years and trying to determine whether or not they need to make changes.
Hmm. That's very interesting. So looking at the other side, and you have an Israeli government that is potentially sprinting towards an election. There's a lot of talk of that in the Israeli media. Do you think within the context of what's happening within Israeli politics that we have a government or at least a security cabinet that's going to be able to sign off and agree and then present to the Israeli public a significant prisoner release? Do you think that it's something that the government will be able to do? We know Prime Minister Netanyahu has done this before in 2012 and the deal that you were engaged in that was, I suppose, much more high profile and involved much larger numbers. But do you feel that the government will be able to pull that one off and sell it to the Israeli public?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that the Bayit HaYehudi, Bennett's party, would remain in the government, that they would support a prisoner deal. I think that they would withdraw, but I think that if this was to come to a vote in the government after a withdrawal from the Bayit HaYehudi, it would have a majority. Even Lieberman would probably support it because he'll be involved in the negotiations of it. And I think that his senior advisors within the Ministry of Defense and the Army will tell him to support it. It would certainly have support in the Knesset because it would get the support of Machane Tzioni and Meretz. So it could go through the Knesset. But I think it seems clear we are heading toward election. I don't suspect that we'll see any real changes in the elections unless there is a change in the personalities of the leadership of the opposition in Israel today. Which might happen the minute that political space opens up. There are no vacuums in any political arena, and I think we will see new opportunities and new possibilities, and I think that this government could be seriously challenged if that were to happen, and then all bets are off. I think that the Israeli society is very split on every issue concerning the Palestinians, and the main thing is that people still don't believe that there's a partner on the Palestinian side. And that's what limits our ability to move forward with the Palestinians, either of Hamas or of the PLO, in any direction. But again, a new election season also opens opportunities for expressions from the Palestinian side to be made in terms of what their aspirations are in the future. My major fear, and this is on the side of everything, or this is on the top of everything, is that we may very well be losing the possibility of ever reaching a two-state solution, which I think is totally disastrous for Israel, for Zionism, for the Jewish people. It's becoming more and more difficult for us to define ourselves as the democratic nation state of the Jewish people. And this, I think, is existential for us as a nation. And this is what these elections really need to be about.
Yeah, yeah. Just a final question about the mechanics of these kind of negotiations. I mean, you've kind of seen this firsthand. We're hearing in the media about the involvement of Egypt, potentially the involvement of Qatar, but these talks are indirect, so they are mediated, involve shuttling between Israeli officials and Hamas officials without Israel and Hamas ever speaking directly. Could you give us a bit of an insight into how that works and also how effective you think that the Egyptian mediators can and are?
I think the main negotiators are the Egyptians, and this is President Sisi and Kamal Abbas, the head of the Egyptian intelligence, who used to be the chief of staff of Sisi's office, and Nikolai Mladenov, the direct representative of the Secretary General of the United Nations, who's been shuttling back and forth into Cairo. And the Israelis and the Hamas people have been back and forth into Cairo. The Egyptian intelligence people have been back and forth into Gaza. And although not reported, I'm assuming that they're visiting quite frequently in Tel Aviv as well. There are also telephones and other means of communication that are used by people in these circumstances, mm-hmm. including things like WhatsApp and Skype. These negotiations take place. There haven't been direct Israeli-Hamas contacts other than myself and a person in Hamas, and we're not officials in doing this, but we've been given signals to talk to each other and to exchange ideas, but this is definitely not part of the official talks. It's really centered, and the Qataris are really much more there to help to provide finances for deals that might be worked out. They're not really involved in the negotiations. It's really focused on Nikolai Mladenov and Kamal Abbas from the Egyptian intelligence.
Right, right. Okay, I think, Gershon, we will leave it there, but that is incredibly insightful. Thank you so much for your contribution. It was really great to have you on the show. We hope to have you on in the future. Thank you very much.